The weekend is near, and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
We emerged from round 17 thinking we were all over the AFL landscape and who might be coaching where in 2020. But 2 days after round 17, the footy media bubble exploded with Alan Richardson dismissed as St Kilda coach, or, as the club put it, mutually parted ways. We'll discuss Richo's tenure, what's next for the Saints, and a lot more on the Fox Footy Podcast. Ben Waterworth with you, as is Maxwell Lawton as well. Hello, Maxi.
Oh, my full formal name. Thank you.
Yes, that's all right. And speaking of formal names, Thomas Richard Morris. Hello, Thomas.
Hello, Ben. Hello, Max. It's good to be back.
Have you had much sleep over the past sort of 48, 72 hours?
Well, not over the past 7 weeks. The World Cup built to an unbelievable crescendo, and then the World Cup final, I went to sleep the innings break and thinking I'd wake up for the back end of Federer versus Djokovic and the World Cup game itself, and I did it perfectly. I woke up at about 45 overs,
well,
and it was in the fifth set for Federer versus Djokovic. And
they just didn't go much longer after that, did they?
No, not really. No, but I couldn't get back to sleep after they both finished. I was too excited, so I went for a run at 5:30 a.m.
Oh, as you do. That's such a Tom Morris thing to do.
Well, when you can't sleep. Like, oh,
that's true.
It was so exciting. Both were amazing. It was a proper two-screen night. It was awesome.
So you
even three-screen if you want to watch Lewis Hamilton.
If you have KO, perhaps, yeah, you could do something.
You are doing a podcast at the moment called The Miracle of 99,
yes,
where the semi-final between Australia and South Africa in 1999 is widely regarded as the best game of one-day cricket ever, or certainly the best World Cup game.
Yeah.
I think the England-New Zealand game might have usurped it.
Well, it's a shame because The Miracle of 99, I hope people are listening to it.
We're
two episodes of four in, and you've got Gilchrist and War and these, and Crash Craddock. And others. And we, in episode four, I've already voiced it. It hasn't come out yet. I think I've said a couple of times that this is undoubtedly the greatest World Cup game of all time. I'm going to have to go back and redo it.
You might have to.
Because clearly the greatest World Cup game of all time now is where two teams were level after 102 overs. And that's what happened to Australia versus England versus New Zealand.
What is the AFL comparison for having a World Cup decided by most boundaries hit over the course of a tournament?
Oh, yes.
No, it's the most boundaries hit in the game.
In the game, okay. I don't know this.
Well, it's the grand. It would have been.
What's a cricket?
What used to happen in the grand final if it was a draw in week two of the grand final? What happened then? What happens if Collingwood St Kilda drew in week two of 2010?
Was it infinite draws?
I think it would. I thought it went to extra time.
They just had the one replay.
The only thing I can think of, and I mentioned it on the couch, is the last possible tiebreaker if two or more teams are equal on points percentage and points for and points against
the
finals.
This is Max's wheelhouse.
Yeah. I thought it was a flip of the coin to who gets in the finals, but it's not, because there could be three teams that are equal. So Steve Hocking, as per the laws, the regulations of the AFL, would pull the team name out of a hat.
Which is essentially the same thing, just regarding hat wear rather than coinage.
The boundary rule is ridiculous.
Would it be a top hat?
Would it be sort of beret Gil wore when he went to the races in Warrnambool that one time?
Jason Mraz hat, I think.
I'm yours, Tom.
Yeah, I think the boundary, just if I can indulge, if you can indulge me for one second.
We talk about wrestling so much, you may as well talk about something.
The decision by people at the ICC to sit in a room and go, okay, what's a countback system? Yeah, okay, we'll go boundaries, is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
Plucked out of nowhere.
Well, because it's actually a better effort for New Zealand to make 240 with six fewer boundaries than it was for England to make 240 with six more boundaries.
Yes.
They scored off more balls. Yes. The game isn't boundaries, just like you can win games of footy but kick fewer goals.
Yeah.
The game is scoring.
Yes, and also that New Zealand lost less wickets. And granted,
that would seem like the obvious one to me.
Well, the obvious one to me is it's one over, go another super over.
Yes.
So just back to footy.
But
back to footy still in that sense. So if we then go to golden point in a grand final, is that now... We've seen the Federer-Djokovic match go to, what, 12-11?
13-12, because they have the tiebreaks at 12-12 now at Wimbledon.
That's right. So is golden point the right way to decide a grand final if it goes that way?
I don't mind golden point, but I think it should be golden goal.
Right.
I think it should be the next team to kick a goal. Or you just keep playing extra time and you keep swapping ends every 5 minutes. But I don't know the details, Max. You might know better than me. But there's something in the regulations. I was hearing Jared Waitley speak about it on Monday morning on SEN.
Mm.
where it goes to extra time in the grand final.
Yes.
And then it rolls over into Golden Point.
Yes. So
without people knowing.
You have two periods, and then if after 5 minutes of the second extra time it is still tied, the siren doesn't sound.
Yep.
It just immediately transitions. So assumably the entire stadium would be yelling and letting them know in some fashion.
But how would you know? Because imagine you're
not... No runners.
Yeah, no runners.
It surely comes up on the... Yeah. Well, I mean, we talk about these things and we think, oh, they're never going to happen. But this year, Dane Rampey has climbed a post and a World Cup has been decided on boundaries. Like, things happen in sport we don't predict, and there has to be safeguards and measures in place so that the regulations make sense. And at the moment, some regulations in some sports just don't.
I've seen the Golden Point in action. I watched a development league. It's the old development league in the VFL. The grand final back in 2014 or 2015. Between Williamstown and Box Hill, went to Golden Point. There was no extra time, so it just went straight to Golden Point because scores were level at the end of regulation time. And a Box Hill player kicked the behind, and then the siren sounded after that. It might have been extra 2 minutes that might have been played, but it just sort of played out like normal. It's probably a bit different, though, at a VFL development league and probably local league level as well, because there's no TV coverage or countdown clock happening. But everyone knows, if you're sitting at home and if you've got radio on in your ears, how much time is left. So that'd be an interesting dynamic.
It will happen at some stage.
Yeah.
Yes. It will go to extra time at some stage, and then the Golden Point's another situation altogether.
I just hope at that stage I am not the person who is having to tweet from the Fox Footy account about it, because it would be so much pressure on me, which is what matters.
You like the pressure
on you. You probably would be tweeting, though, Max. You were tweeting very hard off the Fox Footy account on Tuesday when Alan Richardson and St Kilda parted ways. And speaking of extra time, it kind of wasn't a surprise that Alan Richardson wasn't granted extra time at St Kilda. It was inevitable, but it sort of, certainly from a public perspective, came a bit out of nowhere because the Saints had been quite plucky in defeat against Geelong on Saturday night.
Yeah, Nick Del Santo walked past my desk on Monday and he said, "What do you reckon about the Saints?" And I said, interesting that you're asking me what I think about the Saints because you're the expert, but I assumed he was referring to Richo. And I said, I think he's got 1 to 2 weeks. I don't think he's going to... It's not going to go beyond a fortnight. The next day he was sacked. In effect, probably when Nick and I were having that discussion, the conversation was happening between Matt Finnis and Alan Richardson.
Apparently around the boundary line at Moorabbin Oval, according to Josh Gabelich.
That's right. So good article on foxfooty.com.au by Josh.
Very good coverage from us.
But
I'd say.
Yeah, we've got a strong St Kilda contingent in the office.
Yes.
But the interesting point for me is that they say he resigned. And he technically resigned. But he actually technically didn't resign as well.
He resigned because he was told, "You're going anyway, so you may as
well." So it's his choice whether he wanted to get sacked at the end of the year or resign 6 weeks earlier.
It means you can spin that any way you want, really, can't
Richo
you?
Richo is an absolute realist. We'll hear Ben Dixon speak about it a bit later. We know that Richo is a very good man. And people say this, I mean, it's a bit like a post-mortem. People say after people die, "Oh, what a great guy this person was, what a great woman this person was." But we are absolutely authentic when we're saying Richo is universally liked around the football caper.
It was put to him at his press conference as well, which you attended, and just sort of keen to get an insight for the punters out there what it is like attending a press conference where the coach is gone.
I've been to three now.
But he was asked whether he was too nice as a coach, which he didn't regret as well. Did that, in the end, play any part in his, I suppose, on-field demise or the on-field results?
Part of the narrative last year that he was being too hard on the players at times?
Yeah,
I found that
which
a bit
strange.
Which
I was a bit surprised about.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different factors. Andy Maher summed it up really well yesterday on radio. There's so many different factors that go in to making a football club successful. Mm. And the Saints in 2016 and 2017 were on the cusp of finals.
Mm. That win over Richmond near the end of 2017 was sort of the high point of his coaching career.
Well, it was.
Really.
They won 12 from 45 from then on. But they were so close. But for whatever reason, things just didn't go their way. And who knows with a full list of healthy players where they would have gone this year. But I think it's simplistic to say that he was too nice or too harsh and that's why it didn't work. I think Richo can coach. For whatever reason, over 6 years, it just didn't quite work. The first two of those years, you probably give him a pass because...
Yeah, it's just a rebuild.
It's just a proper rebuild, yeah.
It's very much mirroring North Melbourne, not just in the way that they both parted ways with their coaches, but in that, in a sense, you feel like he got as much out of that team as they could based on the talent. Because for years we've been saying the Saints just don't have the top-end talent. Once Riewoldt and Del Santo and Montagna and all those guys went, they just didn't have those superstar players and it's hard to get that much out of them. So they're coming ninth and winning 12 games, which in a lot of years makes you play finals. And it's a lot like North where they made two prelims out of nowhere. And that's probably much more than that list deserved as well. So it's a very, very similar situation. It's just a realistic situation where Richo was not given enough talent to win a final and get that extra year on his contract.
One narrative I don't like is the media got Richo sacked.
It almost seems to happen when every coach is dismissed.
Someone walked past me at Moorabbin yesterday and said, "This is your fault."
A punter.
No, you called for Brendan Bolton sacking. You didn't call for this one.
No, I didn't call for Richo sacking. But to think that the board will make a decision based on what one or two journalists say, in saying that, no one wanted Richo to be sacked, I don't think. It just was the reality of the situation. Yep. It's a wins-loss business.
You pay attention to these subjects because they're big stories and they clearly look like they're going to happen.
And they're footy stories.
And he got sacked because they won four games last year after winning 11 and 12.
That's my point. He got sacked because of what happened in 2018, and 2019 wasn't enough to reverse what happened in 2018. Yeah. That's the point. He had a win-loss percentage of 34.5% over six seasons. You don't get a seventh season if that's your win-loss percentage.
It's the worst of any coach to have 125 games at one club.
Yep.
So he had a long time.
Yep.
What's it like attending a press conference like that, Tom?
Well, you walk in. And
right, you don't get carried in by chariots.
You walk in, Moorabbin's a good facility.
No and free coffee.
They had so many seats set up. It was like it was a mini theatre.
Yes.
And all the players were sitting there and they're sort of, no one really knows how to act. And Simon Leth leans off to the side. And then
he wasn't really mentioned at all in that presser, was he?
No, he was the elephant in the room. We'll talk about him in a sec. But And then Richo comes in with Matt Finnis and he's followed by his two boys who is either teenagers or early 20s and his wife. They all look quite emotional. And we're told that Matt Finnis will deliver a statement and then Alan Richardson will either deliver a statement or answer questions. He just decided to answer questions. And then once Richo's done answering questions, he'll get up and leave and Matt Finnis will answer more questions. So as not to have a situation which we saw at Carlton where Kane Little and Mark Lagoudache were effectively bad-mouthing Brendan Bolton while he was sitting right there next to them.
Yeah.
So the other point is, is it actually good for Richo to stand up and leave and Matt Finnis goes, okay, he's gone, let's talk about the future?
Essentially happened.
See, David King tweeted about that, saying that he was going on for much too long and talking about all this extra stuff.
Jared and Robbo big on that in 362.
Yeah, he was going on for a long time, but he was being asked the questions. And it would have looked equally bad had he said, okay, I don't want to speak anymore.
Yes.
So I've got no issue with long press conferences. David King, as much as I respect him, and Robbo and Jared don't have to watch. But I think the fact that Matt Finnis... effectively, it was a speaking to your drop Arnie Vinnick style press conference.
Yes,
you're better off just answering the questions until there is none left.
Okay,
in those situations,
so let Richo be Richo.
Well, yeah,
good from you, Maxie. So who's your ideal man for 2020 and beyond? Brett Ratton will take over as caretaker coach, and inevitably will be a big contender for the full time gig. He seems ready and I think willing to have another crack at it, but there's lots of other coaches in different positions. Paul Ruse, the guy who might have a third crack at it.
If I'm St Kilda, I want Ken Hinckley.
Ken Hinckley?
Yeah, I really think Ken Hinckley at Port Adelaide is, I know he's contracted for a while yet, but I think it's becoming a situation which is just not working for whatever reason. They're inconsistent.
They're so consistent at being inconsistent.
That's right. Ridiculous. And I just reckon he's a very good coach for his first few years in charge. I mean, he still might be a good coach all over. But look at Port Adelaide when he joined Port. They had an immediate jump. They made the semis in his first year when Richo was his assistant. Mm-hmm. And then in 2013, they were a kick and a bit off a prelim. Yep. Was it 4 points or 6 points?
Yes, a kick.
So
against the Hawks.
I want Ken Hinckley if I'm a St Kilda person. Right. I don't want Brad Scott. I think I'm open to Brett Ratton, and then you can throw a blanket over all the other assistants.
Now, you're saying that based on what idea do you have of St Kilda's list? Where do you think they are? Do you think Ken Hinckley is good enough to get this team into finals, as Matt Finnis suggested, is the goal for 2020?
Yes.
You think they can play finals next year?
I think with the right coach, they can play finals next year. Because I'm not saying they will play finals with Ken Hinckley, but I think Ken Hinckley can get it done. I think Ken Hinckley's an underrated coach now because of the last year or two at Port and hasn't worked. I think before then, he showed he could seriously coach and he'd be better with a second time round. I think Port might be better off without him as well.
I just don't see it from a talent perspective. I mean,
They are
a bottom four team for sure right now. They have a bottom four percentage. It's about 80. They're one of the four worst teams in the comp. And yes, they have had some horror injuries all season, but Jack Stephen and a full year of Jake Carlisle and Hannabury and all those guys are not going to get you over 100. That's a big jump.
I know, but Robinson, Jack Stephen, Jake Carlisle and Dan Hannabury, all fit, makes a significant difference.
But I don't think it makes that much of a difference.
But we don't know. I think it makes a significant difference. I think it makes them minimum 10-win team if those four are playing.
Is the Well, but is the risk, though, that if you bring in a coach and say, all right, we're going to go for it now, we're going to try and make finals in 2020, and you get it wrong, then you're stuck in the middle again in the worst possible situation where you're not rebuilding, but you don't have enough to try and win a flag. Surely this list can't win a flag.
I don't think the Saints can afford to properly rebuild like they did in 2013. So they have no choice. They either middle, they're either middle of the road trying to be good, or they actually will be a top eight team. I don't think they can actually rebuild again. I think that's done. And that is because of the commercial realities of the club as well.
Well, the Saints will have formed a subcommittee, which Andrew Bassett will lead. They haven't released the specific names of that subcommittee yet, but that'll get going
Grant
soon.
Thomas wants to be on it.
I did see that. That's
all been a weird push, hasn't it?
Bizarre.
Well, he got asked the question and he answers it honestly.
Yeah.
So
as he does. Can I make one point about coach security? It's weird that we've had three coach sackings because there was a really interesting article on the ABC today, which was about how the AFL is actually maybe the most secure sport in the world for coach job security.
Yeah,
we just don't sack coaches anymore. I mean, Rodney Eade, was he the last one before this sort of crop?
2017.
It just doesn't happen. And I think a lot of that, what they explained, is that to do with the soft cap. The soft cap has not gone up very much at all in the last few years.
You can't sack a coach more than a year out from his from the end of his
because
deal.
Because you can't afford it.
If you can't afford it,
What's the soft cap? $9.6 million or something like that? You can't then afford to pay him out and bring a new guy in, especially if you're going for a big name.
Some clubs could afford it. They'll just pay the tax, like a West Coast or a Collingwood.
Yes, which is the luxury that those clubs sort of have in that situation. But I feel like clubs are hanging on as longer and longer because they can't make a different decision, which is an interesting thing. I was surprised to see how little it had gone up in recent years.
From a Carlton perspective...
Can I say one thing, sorry?
Yeah.
The worst argument is don't sack a coach because... Or there's no one better out there. That's what. Imagine if we thought that with Clarko coming to Hawthorn. Imagine if we thought that with John Longmire when he took over at the Swans. There are absolutely better coaches out there. And I've got no issue with sacking a coach because you see what happens with David Teague at Carlton and you see what happens with Reece Shaw at North Melbourne. If it's only just a miniature spike, at least it gives the fans some hope for a short period of time.
Well, there might be a better coach for Carlton out there than David Teague, but the senior players, Tom, as you reported on foxfooty.com.au on Monday night on the couch... they want David Teague at the club next year, and they're sort of taking some action as well when it comes to talking to the higher-ups.
Yeah, this isn't just a casual conversation saying, yeah, we really like Teague. This is a proper push from senior players, and more than just senior players, lots of players, to get David Teague installed as the full-time senior coach.
Great yarn.
Well, it's a simple story, because what you see is Patrick Cripps comes out and tells AFL media a month before Brendan Bolton gets sacked, we're sticking by him, we really like him, he's a great coach. Then he gets sacked. And Patrick Cripps comes out this week, I think it was Tuesday, and tells reporters or a reporter, we really like David Teague, we'd love him to be the senior coach.
Oh, Monday night, footy classified.
So what I'm saying is, players, and I've got no issue with what Cripps has done or other players, but players will always publicly back their coach.
It would be remarkable if they didn't.
Always. So all I care about is what people are saying privately. Mm. And privately, people were very critical of Brendan Bolton. And they were critical of his strategies and tactics. We don't need to go over it again. But people knew it wasn't working. Privately, people are all over David Teague. They love the way he's relaxed. They love, and that is a far cry from Bolton. They love the way that he's letting players play their best positions. Mark Murphy in the midfield, Charlie Curnow forward. He's reinvigorated Jack Silvani's career, which is awesome to see. Now we're seeing the sort of player that we always thought he could become, but never quite showed it consistently. And they love the way that he's able to smile and laugh and relax. And to me, that is 80% of the battle.
Is the concern that this is the snap reaction to winning a few games and being competitive?
That
it's
is
like, we feel happy, let's keep this feeling going, not knowing whether he is actually the best option. I mean, there's a coaching subcommittee, they're going to make a decision. They're not going to do it based on, well, the players say we want this guy. So it could be a factor, but they're not going to make a call based on that, are they?
No, it helps him. It takes him from a 0% chance to, I don't know, a 40% chance. But I think David Teague was no chance a few weeks ago. Now he's somewhat of a chance.
Don't you feel like if he actually got the full-time job, he would have very little rope? This would be a club that would be, again, pushing for a big name, because that's the vibe that you got.
Maybe, but who's out there? What big names are you potentially going to get? It might be Ross Lyon. It won't be Clarko.
There might be some in 2 years. I don't know the contract situation specifically.
You're not waiting. I mean, you give him 2 years. You say, Teague, here's two with a trigger for three, and then let's go.
You work with Paul Ruse on the couch as well. Every week.
For about a minute and a half.
You also produce the Manshake ads, I believe. Don't say that.
There's the link between Ruse and Carlton continues to grow legs every week, and Roosie still sort of hasn't categorically shut it down.
Well, Roosie won't be the coach at Carlton or the coach anywhere.
Would he be the David Noble?
Well, no.
Not the football manager?
Not necessarily, but...
The only role that would be partially similar to what something Paul Roos could do would be Robert Walls,
right?
I think, but it would be paid, obviously.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be at the club before Christmas. He doesn't want to be there every single day of the week working with the players and the coaches on a micro level. Level.
Yes.
His idea, and it doesn't have to be about him, but his idea, as you've heard him say, is about having an overseeing type coach, sitting above the coach and in between the head of footy and just helping out with things, like Robert Walls, but probably on a more official level.
Like a CEO of coaching.
Almost, yeah. It's a new structure that he's a big fan of. I don't think, in saying that, I don't think Roos will be at Carlton, and I'd be surprised if Roos was anywhere next year.
I think it makes sense.
Apart
because
from Fox Footy, obviously.
Yes.
What we see nowadays is that the enormous amount of coaches that clubs have, and that it's a management role with coaches as much as it is with players. You're taking so much input from your assistants and things like that.
Yeah, it never used to exist.
It makes sense then. It's not just you're doing tactics anymore, so it makes sense to sort of split that coaching role into two jobs. Doesn't it? And then get a master strategist and then the master manager and then work together.
Yep.
Let's quickly just turn our attention to on-field in particular and the run home, Maxi. How many teams were actually ruled out of finals contention over the weekend? Because there were some big results but involving teams just outside the top eight.
Yeah, I think realistically probably 10 teams can make it now.
Right.
And that's
down from how many?
Well, Freo were in it, North were in it, Sydney were sort of in it.
Right.
So they all lost, and disappointing results from them. North, in particular, have been charging so well, and that's one of the losses they just couldn't afford to have against a team around them. The Dogs, I guess you can count, and there's a lot of optimism about the Dogs. There's a weird thing I've been noticing from Dogs fans of, like, why is no one talking about us? Look how we're 8-8. Look how good we are. 360, why aren't you spending more time on us? It's like, well, because your percentage is terrible, and at 8-8, you've still got so little margin for error. They have looked quite good.
They have looked really good. So I wrote a piece last week after watching them almost not dismantle Geelong, but seem to regain their 2016 mojo where they just had so many numbers around the ball and it was relentless. And the Geelong defenders were actually outplayed. Geelong's defense is normally so organized. I've never seen it so disorganized this season. And then they were patchy against Melbourne. I think that's been the thing. They've been patching a lot of games.
Weren't great in that game.
But they've been able to get up.
But the 8 games they've lost, they've been in 6 of them.
Yes. They've only been blown away twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's this midfield quartet of Bontempelli and McRae and Dunkley, or midfield trio, have just been... And you can include Hunter, Lockie Hunter, who's the other member. They are just so solid and reliable at the moment and are playing such a big role in feeding the ball out and getting those disposal numbers up.
And they've got a good couple of weeks coming, a few easy games. The Saints, which is a lot more interesting now, obviously, with the Richo sacking and things like that. I still think they need Essendon to fall over. Essendon was the big winner on the weekend because Port lost. Essendon, for me now, they have that big advantage over Port, and both teams have a tough run home. So I think if Essendon goes 3-3, they probably make it now with their percentage. Mm. And the teams above them, Adelaide has quite a kind run home. GWS, there are some questions over them. They're definitely having some issues, but they, again, still have some easy-ish games that they can win. Richmond as well, a lot of people are saying,
I think they're coming. They looked, during that first half against Richmond, against GWS, they looked like the Richmond of 2018 as well. Like they were, besides that prelim, they were awesome in 2018. They looked like, sort of for the first time, that mojo had been regained.
Doesn't it just prove that it's a marathon, not a sprint? You've got to win enough games to be around the mark. And
this is what we've been flagging all year with Richmond. It's like, they'll get there, won't they?
It has been, but we live in a climate, and we're absolutely part of it, of hot takes on who can and who can't
win the
flag.
This is what this podcast is all about.
No, that's fine. I'm not being critical.
I said Fremantle can make the finals after round one.
Oh, yes. What I'm going to do next year is I'm going to, every time someone says, Team X can't play finals or can't win the flag, I'm going to write it down.
Write
and at the end of the year, I'm going to go back through the hot takes of who can't do what.
Ooh, if Twitter account's doing that at this point. The one that surprised me...
I saw one Twitter account saying, is Richo sacked? and then it tweeted, yes.
There you go.
Really?
Really brutal stuff.
Close account. Yeah. It surprised me, who I thought would sort of know a bit better. Brian Taylor said Richmond is a certainty to win the flag.
Saw that, yes.
It's like, no, they're not. They are one of the teams definitely in the mix. They're not a certainty.
Yeah.
And the thing as well, yes, they have a lot of games left at the MCG. In fact, all of them. They might not play somewhere else until 2020 at this rate. But they have some tough games at the MCG. They still have to play Collingwood there. They still have to play Port there. you know, even Carlton's not a super easy game to win nowadays.
Yeah, they'll be tested, but so I like that for them.
That's why I don't think they make the top four, because they will stumble at least once or twice, and they're just enough behind those other teams.
Just quickly on West Coast, so you broke on Monday that Nick Natanui had suffered an ankle syndesmosis injury, which is likely to sideline him. We're still waiting on an official time frame, but it's looking lengthy. It's looking at least 4 weeks. It could be, syndesmosis could be 12 to 16 weeks sometimes. It's still very much up in the air. If Nick Natanui doesn't play for the rest of the season, can the West Coast Eagles win the premiership?
Well, I'm going back on what I just said just before. No, I still think they can. Yes, they won it without him last year.
Didn't he get injured in round 17 last year?
Yeah, it helps them immeasurably if he's playing. Yeah. But I still think they can win it without him. Their system and their best players are still very good. I am worrying about Josh Kennedy in their forward line.
Yeah, Brownie was big on that on Monday night.
Yeah, he hasn't quite been at his best. No. But the Natanui's not playing again this home and away season. Mm. And West Coast can fluff it and bluff us all they want and say, oh, we don't know the time length. Absolutely, they know a rough time length. And at best, it's come back for finals. They're just not letting that on right now. They're being hopeful, and good on them for doing so, because Natanui's not going to have surgeries. They're going to try to do it in that method first.
He has shown, though, that he's been able to come in and make an immediate impact off very limited game time.
I love him. He's such... Yeah.
So good to have him back in the competition. So good to have you back in the podcast bunker as well, Tom, because it is time for Australia's favourite segment on the Fox Footy podcast, Fair or Farce.
That dangerous by Sebastian Vettel. 5 second time penalty.
Max, hi. Criticisms of the AFL over the Suns are justified. Fair or farce?
Fair, because we're certainly allowed to criticise them over the situation they're in, because they've put a lot of money into that club and right now they are a bit of a basket case. But the issue for me is the level of criticism around where they're at. That's what surprised me. And I said this last week too, that yeah, they're terrible. They were supposed to be terrible this year. I don't know why everyone's so shocked.
They've won 3 games.
Yeah.
The problem is they won all at the start.
They were 3-1. How insane is that this list was 3-1 in retrospect? Yeah, yes, they were all close games.
The same thing happened last year, though.
Yes.
Like it's almost a mirror image of from 2018 to 2019 how their seasons
You'd be
out.
Better off winning in round 6, round 12, and round 18. They'll just keep everyone a little bit more relaxed.
Yeah, yeah.
Still the same result.
And they could have their longest losing streak in club history is 14.
Yeah.
They're on 12 right now. So they've got Carlton this week.
Jesus.
The week after would be the one where they could equal it.
I spent half a day at Gold Coast last week. I've got to say, those facilities and the people there are great. Mm. It's just they've been dealt a hand that it's almost impossible to succeed at the moment.
I think it's a situation where they need off-field help more than they need on-field help. On-field, if they get enough opportunities at getting good players in, it'll be fine, and they need the development of those players.
Yeah,
so if you're going to give them an advantage, give them extra room in the soft cap.
You know what I was surprised about and almost I thought ridiculous was Gillon McLachlan not giving any ground, I think, in a Tuesday interview with Jared Waitley on SEN, saying that still not owning up to the AFL made some strategic errors in the makeup of the Gold Coast Suns.
I was amazed at the numbers I was presented with by the Suns. I'm sure they won't mind me saying, but how many young girls and boys are playing footy up there.
Yeah.
It is extraordinary. Per 100 youths.
Per capita?
Per 100 youths, there are more girls playing there than anywhere else in the country.
Great.
It is flourishing at a junior level. So the interest is there more than it is in Blacktown, in GWS. But the club that represents that interest is far worse than the Blacktown equivalent, and that's the problem.
I think I'm right in saying their average crowd at Metricon is higher than the GWS Giants' average crowd at Giants Stadium this year.
It is. Which says more about the Giants, really. That's another issue altogether because they're playing good footy, generally speaking. Mm. Not great footy at the moment.
Yes.
Ben, the next broadcast rights deal will be less than the current one.
I would almost say this is fair because it's looking like this at the moment. And I know that there is some pushback from the broadcasters in recent times that it's just sort of, how can we go more from a financial perspective to meet the demands of the code? The problem is, though, that we've gone up so much in the past two broadcast rights that it's hard to see it being kept up for the next one.
They always say it's going to go down, but it actually might this time.
But there's been a global bubble with all this because all of a sudden everyone's realizing, a lot of people in America in particular are cutting the cord, they're getting rid of cable TV, and the only thing that gets live viewers is live sport. So that it's become uber valuable. And even like wrestling has dressed itself up as live sport and got a huge TV deal in the US and things like that. It's crazy.
The greatest show on sport.
Smackdown on Fox. Yes. It'll be fantastic.
Just to watch this space with that. Max, let's go back to the footy.
Yes.
Fair or farce, Port Adelaide embarrassed itself and went over the top against Brisbane and their physicality on Sunday.
Oh, okay. So farce, but I want to criticise them, right?
Okay.
Because I think it was a bit strange the way they handled the Lachie Neale situation. I mean, you reported about this during the week that Lachie Neale knew what was coming from Port Adelaide.
He knew specifically what was coming. Not just that he was going to be targeted, that Cam Sutcliffe would target him.
That, hey, your mate's going to get you.
That's right.
Member of your wedding party.
So obviously, he tells Brisbane Lions and they're fully prepared for it. And they reacted as if they were fully prepared for it.
And I loved seeing stuff like Mitch Robinson, you know, and Chris Fagan even yelling from the bench at Cam Sutcliffe when he was coming off. It was fantastic.
So did they go over the top or not?
So I think generally this whole thing is a bit over the top. What caught my eye with all this was Brendan Goddard in AFL Tonight Monday.
To steal a tweet
I saw, it's amazing that he's aged 20 years and 6 months. He's suddenly, these kids these days, this Gen Z, they're ruining footy. Remarkable stuff he was saying. Like, back in my day, we got beaten up all the time. Well, perhaps.
Was he saying the difference, though, was more from an under-18s perspective, though?
Yes. So he was saying that kids aren't growing up getting the physical treatment that he did and in his early years in the AFL.
Yep.
And I'm sure that's true. But I think what has happened is, off the field, we know so much more about how to treat sportsmen and how to treat these people. Mental health is becoming such a big issue. And we're being so much nicer off the field. And that can't not bleed into the on-field stuff. So there's no need to be cruel to someone who you're playing against when you're trying to be nice to them off the field. It's a weird sort of crossing of the borders, if you will.
I've got one for you both, and it's not a fair or fast. It's a slightly different thing.
Should we need a new sting or something?
Who you, recess, lunch style, pick one player in the AFL that you'd want in your team if you were starting a team tomorrow to play the next day.
Oh, to play the next day?
So this weekend, ideally.
Well, who are we playing against? Is this like a Space Jam sort of situation?
Anyone.
At full fitness, Nat Fyfe.
Max?
Yeah, he's the best player in the league right now.
Nat Fyfe.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Would you say the same?
I probably would.
Yeah.
Probably.
I think he's the most complete player. I would like to see Nat play out of the goal screen a bit more. The guy said that on the couch on Monday night, didn't
they? He got injured and was still the best player in the ground in the second
quarter. So he's the best player in the game.
It was so stupid.
Anyway, that's all. That's it. That's it for fair or farce. Was that dangerous by Sebastian
Vettel? Farce. 5 second time penalty. Excellent. Nice edition of fair or farce, as always, Thomas. It's now time for our special guest on the Fox Footy podcast, and it's apt that we have him on now because he's been working a little bit part time at St Kilda over the past couple of years, but he does his best work and saves his best work, as always, for Fox Footy and the Fox Footy podcast. It's a good afternoon to the great Hawthorn sharpshooter, Ben Dixon. Hello, Dicko.
Hello, gentlemen. How are we today?
Yes, good. Magnificent, mate. Lovely. Thanks for your time on the podcast. I suppose we've got you on, you know, just hours after Alan Richardson, unfortunately, his tenure at St Kilda has finished. You spent a little bit of time with Alan during your time at St Kilda as well as a goal-kicking coach. What was your immediate feeling as the news started to come out and then watching Richardson at the press conference?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think relief was the first thing I felt for Alan. Been under a lot of pressure for a long time now. And I think even when you put up a performance, which wasn't too bad on the weekend against Geelong, because many teams have been down there and smacked from pillar to post. And for them to be in it for three quarters and then resignation following that game, I think it just stands out, the pressure that he was under. And one thing you know about Richo, and I've worked with him now for 18 months, is integrity. He's at a premium and he's just honest. And he's a realist. He understands and he reads it as good as anyone. So he's been in the chair now 6 years. And I think if you look at last year, it was obviously a really disappointing year and they started so well this year. And he's thrown everything at it. So I think, one thing he would do, and one thing I've picked up on Alan Richardson, is he'll never ever put himself first. He always puts the club first, regardless of what he does. So I think it's a pretty strong and bold decision, and I'm sure he would have made that call. I know the club obviously have had discussions with him, but I think ultimately, he makes the call and he stands by it, and that pretty much sums up the man.
Dicko, what did you make? I was at the press conference. What did you make of Richo twice referring to the fact that the team couldn't kick the ball through the big sticks? I didn't think it was a jab at you, but certainly he was talking about the inaccuracy over his period at St Kilda really hurt him and really frustrated him.
Yeah, well, the accuracy, and I didn't read anything into that because I'm fully aware what we look at numbers-wise at the footy club.
Yep.
We sit in match committee every week and address everything, really. So when you look at it, I can see his frustration too. It frustrates me, and it hasn't been just 1 or 2 years. It's been happening, if you look at their trends, for 4 or 5 years, so almost his whole tender.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, there can be wallpaper over the cracks. So when you win games of footy, but not quite getting that right. Like, you're getting your opportunities, but you're making the most of it. And I was certainly comfortable with his comments because I came into the club last year and they finished 18th in the goal kicking in the previous couple of years. So, and when the media or anyone that calls himself an expert talks about goal kicking, and they either, you know, pot me and say, oh, you know, they're 18th in goal kicking.
Yeah.
But you've got to know the specifics of it. And if you do your research properly, I'm in charge of set shots. And, you know, their improvement has gone north in set shots this year. So it's not something that anyone that does a little bit of research on would know what specific role I've got at that football club. And then when you say 18th in shots, that's shots on goal. So that's including snaps on the run. And so you're happy to wear that. But I can understand his frustration when you get so many opportunities to kick a score and you don't kick a score. That ultimately probably decides your season on whether you play finals and you win games of footy. So he's yet to play a final and win a final. And it's marginal gain, and I've always called it marginal gain, goal kicking. It's one area where you look at, we are the biggest vehicle in Australia and we are the most professional and we pump the most money into our sport, yet you can't tell me who the goal-kicking coach is at 5 clubs or 3 clubs. So I think it's an area that we totally dismiss. So that, as Richo pointed out, you know, we just couldn't get it through the big sticks enough, is 100% right. And if you're not addressing it right from the get-go, or you're not improving it, or you're not willing to sort of hit it head on, then you're kidding yourself, because as a team, you work so hard on offense, so hard on defense, but there's a finishing element to it, and a lot of clubs just dismiss it, and it costs you games of footy, and it's cost him a lot of games of footy.
So, Dicko, so I was going to say, Dicko, if the set shot accuracy has gone north, it's interesting that at the same time then that your name's appeared just sort of towards the bottom end of the betting markets for St Kilda's next coach. Did you add your own name in there, or have others sort of thrown you under the bus here?
No, I've been thrown under the bus. I've seen some names at $41. Gee whiz. I would have thought I was 400 to 1, but anyway, I'll take the $41 shot. But it's an interesting one, because when we look at the next coach, it's how long is a piece of string? Like, if the clubs do their due diligence, like Carlton will be doing theirs, and North Melbourne, albeit that Shorey's coaching really well and Teague's coaching really well, you just got to go through the process. And, yeah, I'm flattered to be on a $41 list. Yeah, I would have had him at 400, but I don't think we can get the market out that far.
Says plenty about you, clearly. Dicko, you were on the boundary for Suns v Crows on the weekend. That would have been an interesting game to be bearing witness to.
Considering they came off a 100-point loss to Richmond and Adelaide got belted in a showdown, we knew what the result was going to be.
Mm.
Because when you look at both teams, experience and personnel, I mean, they're Swiss cheese at the moment, the Gold Coast Suns. And it just, when I mean Swiss cheese, they've got holes in experience, they've got holes in anything. So I find it really difficult to watch for Stuart Dew, because Stuart Dew is a sensational coach. I spent 20 minutes with him before the game in the rooms, and he was walking through his team and what he was going to obviously try and implement, and he's doing everything right. There is no doubt they have the right man there for the job. It's just what that football club has on its talent plate is not what it should be, and it's not up to standard. And ultimately, when you're developing a team, it's very difficult to develop, and I've been in this situation at Hawthorn, it's very, very difficult to develop young kids if you don't have legitimate experience and legitimate leaders at your footy club leading the way and the young kids follow. And what happens with that is you lose your confidence and you lose your ability to develop, and you're caught between a rock and a hard place. So my suggestion on Monday was to trade Lukosius, like, now. Like, start that conversation now. And trade Ben King back to Melbourne right now. And trade every ounce of talent you have in that football club right now. And you never know what you can get if you rip the cover off and say, righto, what's on the table now in terms of talent? So ultimately, you can't spin your wheels any longer. And if a Lukosius wants to leave in 2 years, and I don't have a crystal ball and I'm not privy to what's happening inside that football club, but he's a talent, he's an Adelaide boy, you might be able to get something serious for him. So I think you've got to trade in 12 players minimum that you can build a nucleus around, and then you start to revisit the development stage, because at the moment it's just it's not acceptable, and it's not Stewie Jew's fault at all.
Yep.
I think he's a sensational coach, and obviously spent a lot of time with Stewie, so I know exactly what his mandate is. So that's where it's at right now. Very hard to watch, especially after 200-point losses a week back-to-back.
So there's been some pretty big list changes at the Suns over the past couple of years, particularly last year. So 12 players out, that's quite a radical move. Is it just a case of, from a league perspective, from an optics perspective, that we can't have the Suns being such an outlier as the 18th team? So it's almost an impatience thing that we have to get the Suns right sooner rather than later?
We've got to get it right now. And I'll give you an example. I don't know how much research went into the environment of the Gold Coast. Now, we're talking about two Suns in Queensland, two teams in Queensland.
Yep.
One's in Brisbane's a different story. But you're in a party town, Gold Coast. You're in a sunny state, and everything from a demographic of 18 to 22, like, you just got distractions everywhere. But the one thing you got to do, if you're going to have a franchise there, I'd be very surprised if the AFL didn't fly over and research Miami. How do they have a professional football franchise in a country or a state like that? And what works, what doesn't work? How do you embrace the people in that culture, in that town? And then as a player, what are you looking for? Like, when I say that, and I mean get 12 players in next year to the Gold Coast Suns, you might be looking at players that have established families that want to spend the next 4 years on the Gold Coast. And you've got a senior player who's got 4 or 5 years left that wants to give it his all. He's morally sound. He's got great character. He's got great leadership. And he's got a lot of footy left in him. And he's a top quality player. Now, you don't know that. You don't know the answer on whether they will or won't go, but you've got to ask the question. And you never know unless you ask. So, the biggest thing for me right now is their recruiting department should be in overdrive, researching, go and have dinner with the families, go and find out who would leave, who would spend 4 or 5 years up there. And that's what I'm talking about. Like, it's not just, okay, let's get kids in and let's wait 2 years. You can't wait. You got to move now. So that's my views on the Gold Coast.
Just one last one on the Suns. If you're looking at it now, if you're looking from a recruitment list perspective at the moment, do you personally have a wish list? Is there a player with 4 to 5 years of experience left who's hitched, who's got a couple of kids that might look to finish their season, or their career on a high? Bryce Gibbs is 30, so he probably doesn't have as many years left. But is that the kind of player?
No, I wouldn't be looking at that. I'd be looking around the 27, 28 years of age.
Jared Lyons, perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but it doesn't necessarily need to have a family. It might be, a change of environment. Like, it might be, at a footy club, he's gone stale, or how do you know a club won't give up an A grader if they get pick one, they get Lukosius, and they get something else? Like, come on. Everything's for sale in the AFL. So when you look at it, it's a big call, and it's a bold call, but I don't have anyone on my wish list right now. If I sat down and did my homework, I could probably pluck your 10 names that you'd target. But once you start delving into it, I think you might find 20 names or 30 names, and then you've got to filter your way back. And then that's how you can build a nucleus of support around for a football team. But, what's to say, for argument's sake, you went to a Hawthorn and you asked for a Sicily, but you were prepared to give them number one pick, which gets Matty Rao and someone else. Clubs will entertain and have a look, won't they?
Oh,
will they not?
Oh, no, I agree. Yes, if you're prepared to be bold, you normally get something back.
Exactly right. So you've got to be bold. And, Michael Voss, when I worked with him for a year, he always said, dare to be great. Like, you never know unless you ask, and you just got to have a go. So that's where it's at. you probably start at the top and work your way back. But there's no easy fix, let's be honest. But I think that's a pretty good start, and that gives Stuart Dew something coachable in front of him to at least build up a competitive football team.
Well, you mentioned Matty Rowell just then, Dicko, and you, of course, were all over all the under-18 stars. You are an under-18 expert on Fox Footy and doing a magnificent job at that. Thanks for your time on the Fox Footy podcast. You'll be tearing it up to shreds in Perth for the Dockers and the Swans game. So looking forward to seeing your boundary work there and interviewing Ross Lyon, which you always do very well. Good on you, Dicko.
Thanks very much, boys. Appreciate you giving up a little time for me to come on.
Well done, Dicko.
Thanks very much to Hawthorne sharpshooter Ben Dixon. He was talking there about Gold Coast being prime there for the 18 to 22-year-olds there, Thomas. Can you sort of empathise with Dicko's comments about Gold Coast?
As someone
there?
Who's just been on the Gold Coast?
Yes.
Yeah, it's very interesting what he had to say.
not really talking about your week there, Tom?
No.
You had a good time?
Oh, it was good. Yeah, it's great. I think the Gold Coast is a great spot. The comparison with Miami I found really intriguing.
Yeah, that was it.
Or was he literally talking about Miami on the Gold Coast, the suburb?
No, I think he was talking about Miami, Florida.
Okay, just wondering.
Where I also have been, and I mean, there's a lot more. There's not enough people in the Gold Coast. That's the difference.
You took your talents there to Miami.
What were my talents?
Song reference?
No, it's what LeBron said when he moved to the Miami Heat.
All the best.
I'll keep to cricket, thanks.
Speaking of Max, it's now time for Australia's second favourite segment, Max's Mailbag.
Oh, man, I'm up to second.
Yes.
It's a tissue.
Yes. Play on.
That sting gets worse and worse every week. Mm. The Mailbag, if you want to get involved in the Mailbag, by the way, we send out a tweet every Monday at some stage whenever I remember. Reply to that with your questions. We'll answer the best. Such as this one from Cole White, who asks, would James Warple be more hyped had he been a top five pick? Very similar output to the much lauded Walsh. Had he played one fewer game last season, he would be eligible for the Rising Star.
Yes, no, I think that's probably a fair call if we're doing a fair or fast. I think that's probably a fair call because he was taken in the 40s. But the thing is with Warple is that he played every single, I think he would have only missed one or two TAC Cup games in both his 17th and 18th years. So this guy's been ready-made to go for a long time. He was a very good player for Vic Country as a bottom major in the under-18 championships and then starred. And then he was the co-captain of that Geelong Falcons team that won the TSC Cup grand final after the siren. He's been ready-made to go for a while. I am surprised, though, that he's been able to adapt to the AFL level so quickly from a pace perspective and an endurance perspective, because that was always a big knock on him, his endurance and his speed, but he seems to have really caught up and worked hard off the field.
I'm surprised that everyone is underrating Sam Walsh. And I think Sam Walsh is a superstar.
Yep.
And I don't agree, not everyone's underrating, lots of people are underrating him.
Kane Corns in particular.
He's not a safe midfielder that's going to play 250 games and be reasonable his career. He's
going to be a 250 gamer, how horrible.
He's an absolute superstar at a bottom team now. And he's going to be a complete superstar in a team that gets better down the track if Carlton improve. He's a gun.
On the AFL player ratings for this year, he is the fourth best player in his draft class.
Ever?
No.
Of this season?
Of this year's draft class.
Oh, really? Sydney
Stack is a clear number one. I believe Rosie's above him. I don't have them in front of me.
Well, I just love Walsh.
But he's a very good player. And the role he is playing.
Yeah, that's part of the reason.
Like, it's very hard to be a small forward going straight away like Jaden Stevenson did last year. But to be slotted in and be so crucial to that Carlton midfield is what's been.
If he does have a little bit more room left in his ceiling, how good could he be? Because the other concern I have is that he set such a high standard in his 18th year. How much room has he got to grow?
Well, he does because he can still get physically stronger.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
Is that the case? That's the argument that he was a safe pick, that he's going to come in and be at this level straight away. He has a good floor.
It's a darn good level to be at straight away, though.
Happy to take that pick one. Mick asks, can the Cats have final success while continually losing the clearance count? Winning hitouts doesn't translate to winning clearances for them.
Hitouts are the most overrated stat in the world.
Jared Healy.
By themselves, yes.
Hitouts to advantage.
Thanks, Glenn.
And we should have hitouts to disadvantage as well.
Ooh, yes.
That would be a good stat, wouldn't it? How many times?
Sharks hitouts, I think, is the official term.
Is it? Yeah, exactly.
You credit it to the player who did
it. Yeah, I don't know enough to answer the question knowledge. I just know that hitouts are overrated.
The Cats were doing really quite well in the midfield through the start of the season. I think the last 4 weeks they've lost the contested ball, the clearances every time, maybe.
The other thing is, though, that the Giants are the number one team in the competition at scoring from clearances, but are the worst at scoring from turnovers at the moment and on a downward trend. So I think as long as the Cats keep their forward half slash turnover game up, I think they'll be okay. But it is a bit of a watch, the clearance stuff, particularly against Collingwood and the Giants, who are very good teams at scoring from clearances. So they need to make sure they just have that balance
that,
right.
That idea that scoring from stoppages is a luxury.
Yes.
And you have to score from...
It's a bonus, Kingy says, doesn't he?
Turnovers to win. Mm. Queensland sports fan, a birth name, I assume, asks, why isn't Goodwin under more scrutiny?
Because when you make a prelim, you get a year's grace. He will be under significant scrutiny next year.
Right.
If, and if this year... If they, sorry, next year, if they have the same year as having this year, he won't be coached by this time next year.
I think you're probably right.
Yep. So, Nick, and you know what? You finish top four in a competitive league, you probably do deserve a year's grace. Everything has gone wrong for them. Not saying that it's not just his fault, but lots of things have gone wrong outside of his control as well. The buck needs to stop with him, but he'll get next year. And if things go wrong, then he won't be coached beyond that.
I already know I'm going to probably pick them for at least top six next year. Because it's just like there's so much talent in that list and they just didn't get a proper run at it this year with all their preseason surgeries and stuff like that. I'm worried that everyone's going to do the same thing and then they're going to plummet again. I want to see them succeed because they were so great to watch last year. Yep. They scored so well.
Yep.
Last one, I want to get you guys' take on the Suns on what you think should be done. Tim Innes asks, I'm sure the AFL will be too stubborn, but I can't ever see them working, and he wants them to fold them and move them to Tassie and then extend the Lions Academy to the existing Suns area so you continue to have a Queensland pathway. What do you think is the best course of action for them right now?
No, I've changed my tune since being up at the Suns. Keep them there. Just give them all the help you can get. Don't give them one priority pick. Give them four picks in the top 25 and do it 3 years in a row and give them extra salary cap space and make sure that people like Jared Roughhead and Jared McVay, and Obi McVay's contracted to the Swans to be an assistant coach, but these good people that are nearing retirement, pay them extra to get them up there.
Well, what about, the as Dicko said, the 6-7 years before retirement kind of... Like, then he was essentially...
They're the players who you bring up and they actually create the culture and the development.
Yeah, but I'd love to see some names. How many good charactered 26, 27-year-olds are around that are actually also really good players?
If you're trading...
Dangerfield and...
Yeah, no, but how many would want to go to the Suns? You need someone who's not in their team. So you need an Anthony Miles. Oh, there we go. You need a George Hall and Smith.
Jordan Murdoch.
These people are around, but... You need more than that. You need to actually stockpile it.
You need more talented ones than, admittedly, the guys that the Suns brought in last year.
Well, yeah, they can't just be good characters. Like, you're a good character, Ben, but I don't think you're playing the forward flank for the Suns.
That's very kind
of you. So, I don't know.
Better than me.
My opinion is there's always going to be a bad team. This is even worse because the Suns are a foundation team. And if it was Carlton, you'd go, well, they're going to come back. The Suns, they might not.
Weird hypothetical. If this team was the exact same situation it is right now, but it was the Southport Sharks, What would be the feeling around it? Would it be better because they wouldn't feel so fake as a club because it was created as this franchise? There's at least some basis in the society of the Gold Coast there. Would that help at all?
Don't know. I haven't thought about it.
I don't think... It's kind of like Port Adelaide. Because, so if Port Adelaide really struggled... I suppose Port Adelaide, though, had 30 Sandful premierships under their belt when they came in.
I saw brief references to this on social media during this week, that there were people saying that in the early years about Port Adelaide before they really got it together in the early 2000s. So,
We forget how bad the power were at the start of this decade. Looking back through some of the records recently, like they were lucky they didn't finish on the bottom the year the Suns came into the competition.
The Suns have only won one wooden spoon.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Quite remarkable. Round 18, tips and cups, as we quickly finish off here on the Fox Footy podcast. Adelaide and Essendon, this is for the Hayden Skipworth Cup.
Adelaide.
I think who wins this probably finishes on top of the other.
Right.
Adelaide, because they're at home, and I'm just a little worried about the Don still.
Richmond and Port Adelaide, Maxi, for the Danny Meyer Cup.
Richmond.
Right. Carlton and Gold Coast for the time on a Gorringe Cup.
Isn't it weird to have a round where Carlton's the biggest favourite?
Yes.
How crazy is that? Carlton.
Giants and Pies, this is for the Lockie Keefe Cup.
Could he play? Or is he hurt?
No, I don't think he will be playing.
I think the Giants are due. I think they're going to win this.
I think their issues might be real, so I'm going to tip the Pies.
Right. Stephen Canelio obviously out for the rest of the season. Nice work from Josh Gablich, breaking that for foxfooty.com.au. Brisbane Lions and North Melbourne. This is for the Ben Robbins Cup.
Brisbane.
Makes me want Baskin Robbins.
Yes.
Brisbane.
Fremantle and Sydney for the Troy Cook Cup.
Freo.
Yep. Geelong and Hawthorne. David Loates Cup on the line here.
Geelong.
I'm never going to feel comfortable tipping Geelong in a Geelong-Hawthorne game. Oh, yeah. I will, but...
One of your favourites, Tom, Melbourne and West Coast for the Stephen Armstrong Cup.
Yes, absolutely. No, West Coast.
In Darwin.
This is in, correct? Yes. No, Traeger Park in Alice Springs. I've
played at Traeger Park.
How'd you go?
Kicked a couple.
No wonder Melbourne's struggling.
I was 15.
You had a couple of players on the chest coming out, did you? A couple of
Yep.
Get it, Stephen May. Not about me, Ben.
St Kilda and the Western Bulldogs finishing off for the Luke Penny Cup.
I remember Luke Penny.
Yes. Yep.
Good job. The guy who used to live...
So what kind of connection is this? Here we go.
One of my friends growing up, I used to play driveway cricket with him at the front of my house in Glenorys. His second cousin was Luke Penny. And Luke Penny came around with a St Kilda jumper one day. There you go.
Right.
And I was in awe of Luke Penny.
You're an easily impressed child.
I'm tipping the Saints here for the rebound effect reasons that we have seen on several occasions this year.
Oh, no, the Dogs should be better.
It wouldn't be a Fox Footy podcast without a Tom Morris name drop. Hope you've enjoyed
Luke
it.
Luke Penny.
On the Fox Footy podcast. And keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.
Luke Penny, you star.